Chapter 7. He was in a great hurry to know all, in order to lose no time finding out what he felt he must know at once. He told the coachman to drive him straight to Trusotsky's rooms. On the way he changed his mind. "Let him come to me himself," he thought, "and meanwhile I can attend to my cursed law business." But today he really felt that he was too absent to attend to anything at all, and at 5 o'clock he set out with the intention of dining. And at this moment, for the first time, an amusing idea struck him. What if he really only hindered his law business by meddling as he did, and hunting his wretched lawyer about the place, when the latter plainly avoided meeting him? Velchaninoff laughed merrily over this idea. "And yet," he thought, "if this notion had struck me in the evening instead of now, how angry I should have been!" He laughed again, more merrily than before, but in spite of his merriness he grew more and more thoughtful and impatient, and could settle to nothing, nor could he think out what he most wanted to reflect upon. "I must have that fellow here," he said at length. "I must read the mystery of him first of all, and then I can settle what to do next. There's a duel in this business." Returning home at 7 o'clock, he did not find Pavel Pavlovich there, which fact first surprised him, then angered him, then depressed him, and at last frightened him. God knows how it will all end," he cried, first trying to settle himself on a sofa, and then marching up and down the room, and all the while looking at his watch every other minute. At length, at about 9 o'clock, Pavel Pavlovich appeared. "If this man was cunning enough to mean it, he could not have managed better in order to put me into a state of nervousness," thought Velchaninoff, though his heart bounded for joy to see his guest arrive. To Velchaninoff's cordial inquiry as to why he was so late, Pavel Pavlovich smiled disagreeably, took a seat with easy familiarity, carelessly threw his crepe-bound hat on a chair, and made himself perfectly at home. Velchaninoff observed and took stock of the careless manner adopted by his visitor. It was not like yesterday. Velchaninoff then quietly and in a few words gave Pavel Pavlovich an account of what he had done with Liza, of how kindly she had been received, of how good it would be for the child down there. Then he led the conversation to the topic of the Pogoryeltseffs, leaving Liza out of the talking altogether, and spoke of how kind the whole family were, of how long he had known them, and so on. Pavel Pavlovich listened absently, occasionally looking ironically at his host from under his eyelashes. "What an enthusiast you are," he muttered at last, smiling very unpleasantly. "Hum, you seem in a bad humour today," remarked Velchaninoff with annoyance. "And why shouldn't I be as wicked as my neighbours?" cried Pavel Pavlovich suddenly. He said this so abruptly that he gave one the idea that he had pounced out of a corner where he had been lurking, on purpose, to make a dash at the first opportunity. "Oh, dear me! Do as you like, pray," laughed Velchaninoff. "I only thought something had put you out, perhaps." "So it has!" cried Pavel Pavlovich, as though proud of the fact. "Well, what was it?" Pavel Pavlovich waited a moment or two before he replied. "Why, it's that Stepan Mikhailovich Bagantov of ours, up to his tricks again. He's a shining light among the highest circles of society, he is." "Wouldn't he receive you again, or what?" "No, not quite that this time. On the contrary, I was allowed to go in for the first time on record, and I had the honour of musing over his features, too. But he happened to be a corpse, that's all." "What? Bagantov dead?" cried Velchaninoff in the greatest astonishment, though there was no particular reason why he should be surprised. "Yes, my unalterable 6 years standing friend is dead. Died yesterday at about midday, and I knew nothing of it. Perhaps he died just when I called there, who knows? Tomorrow is the funeral. He's in his coffin at this moment. Died of nervous fever, and they let me in to see him. They did, indeed, to contemplate his features. I told them I was a great friend, and therefore they allowed me in. A pretty trick he has played me, this dear friend of 6 years' standing. Why, perhaps I came to St. Petersburg specially for him. Well, it's hardly worth your while to be angry with him about it, is it? He didn't die on purpose, said Veltchaninov, laughing. Oh, but I'm speaking out of pure sympathy. He was a dear friend to me. Oh, a very dear friend. Pavel Pavlovich gave a smile of detestable irony and cunning. Do you know what, Alexei Ivanovich, he resumed, I think you ought to treat me to something. I have often treated you. I used to be your host every blessed day, sir, at tea, for a whole year. Send for a bottle of wine, do. My throat is so dry. With pleasure. Why didn't you say so before? What would you like? Don't say you, say we. We'll drink together, of course, said Pavel Pavlovich defiantly, but at the same time looking into Veltchaninov's eyes with some concern. Shall it be champagne? Of course. Isn't time for vodka yet? Veltchaninov rose slowly, rang the bell, and gave Mavra the necessary orders. We'll drink to this happy meeting of friends after 9 years' parting, said Pavel Pavlovich, with a very inappropriate and unnecessary giggle. Why, you are the only real, true friend left to me now. Agantov is no more. It quite reminds one of the great poet. Great Patroclus is no more. Mean Thersites liveth yet, and so on. Don't you know? At the name Thersites, Pavel Pavlovich touched his own breast. I wish you would speak plainly, you pig of a fellow, said Veltchaninov to him. I hate hints. His own anger was on the rise, and he had long been struggling with his self-restraint. Look here. Tell me this, since you consider Bagantov to have been guilty before you, as I see you do, surely you must be glad that your betrayer is dead. What are you so angry about? Glad? Why should I be glad? I judged by what I should imagine your feelings to be. Well, this time you are a little bit in error as to my feelings, for once. A certain sage has said, "My good enemy is dead, but I have a still better one alive." Well, but you saw him alive for 5 years at a stretch. I should have thought that was enough to contemplate his features in, said Veltchaninov, angrily and contemptuously. Yes, but how was I to know then, sir? Snapped Pavel Pavlovich, jumping out of an ambush once more, as it were, delighted to be asked a question which he had long awaited. Why, what do you take me for, Alexei Ivanovich? At this moment there was in the speaker's face a new expression altogether, transfiguring entirely the hitherto merely disagreeably malicious look upon it. "Do you mean to say you knew nothing of it?" said Veltchaninov in astonishment. "How? Didn't know? As if I could have known it. And, oh, you race of Jupiters, you reckon a man to be no better than a dog, and judge him by your own sentiments. Look here, sir. There, look at that!" So saying, he brought his fist madly down upon the table with a resounding bang, and immediately afterwards looked frightened at his own act. Veltchaninov's face beamed. "Listen, Pavel Pavlovich," he said. "It is entirely the same thing to me, whether you knew or did not know all about it. If you did not know, so much the more honourable it is for you. But I can't understand why you should have selected me for your confidant." "I wasn't talking of you. Don't be angry. It wasn't about you," muttered Pavel Pavlovich, with his eyes fixed on the ground. At this moment, Mavra entered with the champagne. "Here it is," cried Pavel Pavlovich, immensely delighted at the appearance of the wine. "Now then, tumblers, my good girl, tumblers, quick, capital. Thank you. We don't require you any more, my good Mavra. What? You've drawn the cork? Excellent creature. Well, ta-ta. Off with you." Mavra's advent with the bottle so encouraged him that he again looked at Veltchaninov with some defiance. "Now confess," he giggled suddenly. "Confess that you are very curious indeed to hear about all this, and that it is by no means entirely the same to you as you declared. Confess that you would be miserable if I were to get up and go away this very minute without telling you anything more. Not the least in the world, I assure you." Pavel Pavlovich smiled, and his smile said, as plainly as words could, "That's a lie." "Well, let's do business," he said, and poured out two glasses of champagne. "Here's a toast," he continued, raising his goblet, "to the health in paradise of our dear departed friend Bagantov." He raised his glass and drank. "I won't drink such a toast as that," said Velchaninov, and put his glass down on the table. "Why not? It's a very pretty toast. Look here, were you drunk when you came here?" "A little. Why?" "Oh, nothing particular. Only it appeared to me that yesterday, and especially this morning, you were sincerely sorry for the loss of Natalia Vasilievna." "And who says I'm not sorry now?" cried Pavel Pavlovich, as if somebody had pulled a string and made him snap the words out like a doll. "No, I don't mean that. But you must admit, you may be in error about Bagantov, and that's a serious matter." Pavel Pavlovich grinned and gave a wink. "Hey, wouldn't you just like to know how I found out about Bagantov, eh?" Velchaninov blushed. "I repeat, it's all the same to me," he said, and added to himself, "Hadn't I better pitch him and the bottle out of the window together?" He was blushing more and more now. Pavel Pavlovich poured himself out another glass. "I'll tell you directly how I found out all about Mr. Bagantov, and your burning wish shall be satisfied. For you are a fiery sort of man, you know, Alexei Ivanovich. Oh, dreadfully so. Just give me a cigarette first, will you? For ever since March—" "Here's a cigarette for you. Ever since March, I have been a depraved man, sir. And this is how it all came about. Listen. Consumption, as you know, my dear friend—" Pavel Pavlovich was growing more and more familiar— "is an interesting malady. One sees a man dying of consumption without a suspicion that tomorrow is to be his last day. Well, I told you how Natalia Vasilievna, up to 5 hours before her death, talked about going to visit her aunt, who lived 30 miles or so away, and starting in a fortnight. You know how some ladies, and gentlemen too, I dare say, have the bad habit of keeping a lot of old rubbish by them, in the way of love letters and so on. It would be much safer to stick them all into the fire, wouldn't it? But no, they must keep every little scrap of paper in drawers and desks, and endorse it, and classify it, and tie it up in bundles, for each year and month and class. I don't know whether they find this consoling to their feelings afterwards or what. Well, since she was arranging a visit to her aunt just 5 hours before her death, Natalia Vasilievna naturally did not expect to die so soon. In fact, she was expecting old Dr. Koch down till the last. And so, when Natalia Vasilievna did die, she left behind her a beautiful little black desk, all inlaid with mother-of-pearl and bound with silver in her bureau. Oh, a lovely little box, an heirloom left her by her grandmother, with a lock and key all complete. Well, sir, in this box, everything. I mean everything. You know, for every day and hour for the last 20 years was disclosed. And since Mr. Bagantov had a decided taste for literature— indeed, he had published a passionate novel once, I am told, in a newspaper. Consequently, there were about 100 examples of his genius in the desk, ranging over a period of 5 years. Some of these talented effusions were covered with penciled remarks by Natalia Vasilievna herself. Pleasant, that, for a fond husband's feelings, sir, eh? Volchaninov quickly cast his thoughts back over the past and remembered that he had never written a single letter or a single note to Natalia Vasilievna. He had written a couple of letters from St. Petersburg, but, according to a previous arrangement, he had addressed them to both Mr. and Mrs. Trusotsky together. He had not answered Natalia Vasilievna's last letter, which had contained his dismissal at all. Having ended his speech, Pavel Pavlovich relapsed into silence and sat smiling repulsively for a whole minute or so. "Why don't you answer my question, my friend?" he asked at length, evidently disturbed by Velchaninov's silence. "What question?" "As to the pleasure I must have felt as a fond husband upon opening the desk." "Your feelings are no business of mine," said the other bitterly, rising and commencing to stride up and down the room. "I wouldn't mind betting that you are thinking at this very moment, 'What a pig of a fellow he is to parade his shame like this. Dear me, what a squeamish gentleman you are, to be sure.' "Not at all. I was thinking nothing of the sort. On the contrary, I consider that you are, besides being more or less intoxicated, so put out by the death of the man who has injured you that you are not yourself. There's nothing surprising in it at all. I quite understand why you wish Bagantoff were still alive, and I am ready to respect your annoyance, but—" "And pray why, do you suppose, that I wish Bagantoff were alive?" "Oh, that's your affair. I'll take my oath you are thinking of a duel." "Devil take it, sir," cried Velchaninov, obliged to hold himself tighter than ever. "I was thinking that you, like every respectable person in similar circumstances, would act openly and candidly and straightforwardly, and not humiliate yourself with comical antics and silly grimaces and ridiculous complaints and detestable innuendos, which only heap greater shame upon you. I say I was thinking that you would act like a respectable person." "But perhaps I'm not a respectable person." "Oh, well, that's your own fare again. And yet, if so, what in the devil's name could you want with Bagantoff alive?" "Oh, my dear sir, I should have liked just to have a nice peep at a dear old friend, that's all. We should have got hold of a bottle of wine and drunk it together." "He wouldn't have drunk with you." "Why not? Noblesse oblige. Why, you are drinking with me. Wherein is he better than you?" "I have not drunk with you." "Wherefore this sudden pride, sir?" Velchaninov suddenly burst into a fit of nervous, irritable laughter. "Why, deuce take it all," he cried. "You are quite a different type to what I believed. I thought you were nothing but a permanent husband, but I find you are a sort of bird of prey." "What? Permanent husband? What is a permanent husband?" asked Pavel Pavlovich, pricking up his ears. "Oh, just one type of husbands, that's all. It's too long to explain. Come, you'd better get out now. It's quite time you went. I'm sick of you." "And bird of prey, sir? What did that mean?" "I said you were a bird of prey for a joke." "Yes, but bird of prey? Tell me what you mean, Alexei Ivanovich, for goodness sake." "Come, come, that's quite enough," shouted Velchaninov, suddenly flaring up and speaking at the top of his voice. "It's time you went. Get out of this, will you?" "No, sir, it's not enough," cried Pavel Pavlovich, jumping up too. "Even if you are sick of me, sir, it's not enough, for you must first drink and clink glasses with me. I won't go before you do." "No, no, oh dear, no. Drink first. It's not enough yet." "Pavel Pavlovich, will you go to the devil or will you not?" "With pleasure, sir. I'll go to the devil with pleasure. But first we must drink. You say you don't wish to drink with me, but I wish you to drink with me. Actually, with me." Pavel Pavlovich was grimacing and giggling no longer. He seemed to be suddenly transfigured again, and was as different from the Pavel Pavlovich of but a few moments since as he could possibly be, both in appearance and in the tone of his voice, so much so that Velchaninoff was absolutely confounded. "Come, Alexey Ivanovitch, let's drink. Don't refuse me," continued Pavel Pavlovich, seizing the other tightly by the hand and gazing into his face with an extraordinary expression. It was clear there was more in this matter than the mere question of drinking a glass of wine. "Well," muttered Velchaninoff, "but that's nothing but dregs." "No, there's just a couple of glasses left, it's quite clear. Now then, clink glasses and drink. There. I'll take your glass, and you take mine." They touched glasses and drank. "Oh, Alexey Ivanovitch, now that we've drunk together—" "Oh!" Pavel Pavlovich suddenly raised his hand to his forehead and sat still for a few moments. Velchaninoff trembled with excitement. He thought Pavel Pavlovich was about to disclose all, but Pavel Pavlovich said nothing whatsoever. He only looked at him, and quietly smiled his detestable, cunning smile in the other's face. "What do you want with me, you drunken wretch?" cried Velchaninoff, furious, and stamping his foot upon the floor. "You are making a fool of me." "Don't shout so! Don't shout! Why make such a noise?" cried Pavel Pavlovich. "I'm not making a fool of you. Do you know what you are to me now?" And he suddenly seized Velchaninoff's hand and kissed it before Velchaninoff could recollect himself. "There, that's what you are to me now. And now I'll go to the devil." "Wait a bit, stop," cried Velchaninoff, recollecting himself. "There's something I wish to say to you." Pavel Pavlovich turned back from the door. "You see," began Velchaninoff, blushing and keeping his eye well away from the other, "you ought to go with me to the Pogoryeltseffs tomorrow, just to thank them, you know, and make their acquaintance." of course, quite so," said Pavel Pavlovich readily, and making a gesture of the hand to imply that he knew his duty, and there was no need to remind him of it. "Besides, Liza expects you anxiously. I promised her."
"Liza?"
Pavel Pavlovich turned quickly once more upon him.
"Liza, do you know, sir, what this Liza has been to me? Has been and is," he cried passionately and almost beside himself. "But no, afterwards. That shall be afterwards. Meanwhile, it's not enough for me, Alexey Ivanovitch, that we have drunk together. There's another satisfaction I must have, sir." He placed his hat on a chair, and, panting with excitement, gazed at his companion with much the same expression as before. "Kiss me, Alexey Ivanovitch."
"Are you drunk?"
cried the other, drawing back.
"Yes, I am. But kiss me all the same, Alexey Ivanovitch. Oh, do. I kissed your hand just now, you know."
Alexey Ivanovitch was silent for a few moments, as though stunned by the blow of a cudgel. Then he quickly bent down to Pavel Pavlovich, who was about the height of his shoulder, and kissed his lips, from which proceeded a disagreeably powerful odour of wine. He performed the action as though not quite certain of what he was doing.
"Well, now," cried Pavel Pavlovich, with drunken enthusiasm, and with his eyes flashing fiercely. "Now, look here. I'll tell you what. I thought at that time, surely not he, too. If this man, I thought, if this man is guilty, too, then who am I ever to trust again?"
Pavel Pavlovich suddenly burst into tears.
"So now you must understand how dear a friend you are to me henceforth."
With these words, he took his hat and rushed out of the room. Velchaninoff stood for several minutes in one spot, just as he had done after Pavel Pavlovich's first visit.
"It's
"'Merely a drunken sally, nothing more,' he muttered. "'Absolutely nothing further,' he repeated, "'when he was undressed and settled down in his bed.'